Family duty operation.
That's the FI officer talking. That's the, it's a classic FI answer.
Let me try and get the thing back on a little track here. I'd love to see a photo of Patrick Loomis and some of those other people at some point, but I...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to know how things evolved after the 72 offensive, up until the ceasefire. And before I go, I'd like to know the difference between... Excuse me? Basically, the difference between the operation preceding the ceasefire of 73 and afterwards. Okay, so maybe engaging how much time we're going to spend today on this thing. And there's certainly hours and hours. And if you're willing, I'm willing to come back for a follow-up interview, which I'd then be able to ask more intelligent questions based on your own experience. But after the offensive, 72, it seems to me a very important turning point, and that afterwards preparations are seriously made to hold the line until the ceasefire, which everybody knew was inevitable. What I'd like to know is the difference in anti-infrastructure operations leading up to the ceasefire and then after the ceasefire. You know, that's...
Leading up to the ceasefire is easy in the sense that, as you know, there was an effort to, each side was trying to identify its territory, so to speak.
Yeah, because there's going to be zones.
Oh, yeah.
And that's all being worked out, and everybody knows it's inevitable, right? Okay.
The VC, and I still can't figure out why, unless they, I mean, my own theory was the only reason there was a ceasefire anyways, because the VC wanted to get us the hell out of there so that they could conquer the country.
Yeah.
But in any event, there was an effort made to have, particularly as you got close to the ceasefire, villages or hamlets, what have you, identify themselves as VC. So it became all of a sudden there was a lot of business.
Okay.
Because as soon as we could find out somebody was putting a VC flag on their roof,
okay,
gone. Not in the sense of kill, but it enabled us to pick somebody up and try to interrogate them, and we basically were flooded.
And this is at the Penang Interrogation Center. All the interrogation centers.
I don't know where they went. You know, I didn't follow it. What we would do is we would go out and pick them up. Usually bring them. I usually would work out of the Quang Nam pick.
Okay.
Out down Hoi An. That's where they usually would go first of all.
Okay. Can you describe that facility to me? How big?
The Quang Nam pick.
Yeah. How many cells did it have? How many people could it hold?
It was a square compound with a courtyard in the middle. One side of it was administrative stuff.
Right.
No, two sides of it were administrative stuff. One side of it was sort of guards, and there was one wall where there were cells. How many there were there, I don't remember. 25, I don't know.
I did an interview with the guy who built the pits in 65. I know a lot of them were destroyed in Tet of 68. I was just wondering if it was a prototypical pick, the one that is shaped like a horseshoe with the courtyard in the middle and the green gate that opens up. And
there was,
as you walk in on the left, there's the where you wash, where you get showered down, where you do your photograph, all that stuff. Then you start heading down the left wall, and those where the cells are. Right.
This pick, you go in, the cells were over on this side, the administration
right.
was on this side.
Okay. That's yeah. Pick chief office. Off
that's all right. I really remember.
Okay.
Walked
so
in.
No, it is a typical pick. Okay. At Hoi An. And then?
Where they were processed from there, I don't know.
Well, after they're they're only detained and interrogated in the PIC. After the PIC, they either go to the military or they go to the jail.
Usually they go to back out on the street for all of that.
Okay, so as people begin to wave a flag, you're able to identify them. The crew go out, bring them into the PIC. Okay, and are the crew at this point under special branch? Do you remember when that transition occurred?
I was trying to think about that. I remember we went first where we lost the ability to pay it. A big problem there.
Right, that's when they wanted to kill you.
And it seems to me that's about the time they became SRG,
okay.
Special Reconnaissance Group.
Yeah.
Because we didn't like the word PRU because people were writing about it in the New York Times.
Okay.
So we were
this may be after the offensive of 72?
It seems to me it was before. It seems to me it was about that time. March of 72. Maybe it was after the offensive of 72. Maybe it was after the offensive of 72.
Okay, and then they're called SRG.
SRG.
And then they go under
then
special
they become special police.
How does that happen? Is that when you lose your ability to pay them?
No, we lost the ability when they became. No, wait a minute. How did they go to SRG?
I'd love to know how that might. That would be the most one of the most important things for me to know. Did Seal call you in the office one day and say, "Listen, I can't give you any money anymore"?
No, it came out of Saigon.
Did Buckley come up and talk to you?
No, there was a message. It was one of these things you could call to Saigon, and then Patrick was the one that actually went. And I believe, as I recall it, it was a, they were going to fund the PRU through the National Command Authority, through Saigon,
okay. And
have the assets come down through the regional organization down to the provinces. And
through the special police?
Yeah, it went through the special police. Now how the hell did it get SRG?
Maybe it all happened at the same time?
No, there was a period, it wasn't long, when they were no longer PRU, there were no PRUs, they were SRGs.
Okay.
And the SRGs, it seems to me that they became part of the special police as part of the ceasefire.
Okay.
That in anticipation of the ceasefire, they molded these guys, because they were going to do away with them. And we fought like hell, saying, look, this is the best paramilitary force going in the country. You can't just disband these people.
Right.
You've got to keep them. And so, because we were underwriting the special police, we were able to sell that concept to the special police. And the special police, through the National Police Commander, said, okay, we'll take them.
Okay.
And they were melded into the special police and they became special police officers. And I'm trying to think of
the timing of it is very important if you can remember.
I'm almost positive that the special police timing was as part of the ceasefire. Almost positive of that. When they became SRG, that's what I can't figure out. I know they weren't SRG when I got there in 71. I know they weren't SRG in early 72.
So it's probably in the spring, then there's probably 6 months until...
That's about what you're talking about.
It was only
about a 4, 5, 6 month period.
Well, was there a period there then of 6 months when they were not being paid, when they become special reconnaissance groups? Is that when the funding's cut off?
What happened was, and Ted Shackley would be the guy to tell you how this works. He's the one that did it. He was getting a lot of heat from Langley because of the whole PRU assassination program allegations that were being made in the press.
Okay.
There was a report for the New York Times, and I think Robert Chaplin got his article up in front. I don't know if you've read that one. He came out expressly at Bill Colby's invitation to do an investigation. Colby said, listen, you go do whatever you need to do and write whatever you want to write. And come to whatever conclusion you want to write.
Of course, you know, Colby and Shackley were rivals. That's, you know, there was a little bit of, okay.
And
Chaplin did an investigation.
Let's put it this way. Paul is now back in Washington. Shackley's taken a whirl of heat for a PRU assassination program.
Yes.
Shackley decides that there's got to be a reorganization, they've got to become SRG. Now, Shackley left.
In early 72, and Polgar came in.
Then Shackley,
the same two guys handled Prue. Now, Shackley told me who his men were, who handled the Prue for him.
Yeah.
And then Polgar said, I interviewed Polgar, and Polgar said, those two guys continue to do it. Those guys are Rod Landreth and Phil Potter. Do you remember either of those names? Now, the guy who was actually the counterpart to Tuan was William Buckley. Did you know William Buckley?
Yeah.
Buckley's the guy who killed me. He was the one inside Gone.
The name, now as you say it, Buckley sounds familiar.
Okay.
But you see, I try to stay as far away from Saigon as I could. That place was Byzantine.
Yeah, I'm just giving you the overview of what was happening up there, but I didn't have enough time to ask Shackley. I'll try and get back to him. But
that's,
I'd like to learn a little bit about the time.
Shackley made him SRGs.
Okay.
And it seems to me that Shackley's the one that transferred the pay to the GBN, but I don't remember how in the hell he did it. I don't remember how the function was. I remember that it was a major loss, because when you can't control a guy's pay, what we did to try and keep control was support. We could get them the gee whiz gadgets that they couldn't otherwise get.
Who was paying them? Did their salaries all of a sudden go down to the GBN and they start, instead of getting paid as a crew, getting paid as an Arvin soldier or something?
No, they got paid as a PRU SRG guy, but I remember they were concerned. They were very concerned about it because they knew the Americans were honest and they would pay them an honest, that there was going to be no scam.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to be paid through their own channels. And we basically had to say, you know, I'm a private. The general just said that's the way it's going to happen.
Well, what was it you remember the scene where you told Vin that this was going to happen?
No, I didn't tell Vin. That was Patrick. The issue we were talking about earlier was it involved corruption. There was payoffs and things.
Can you tell me what was happening there?
It seemed to me that basically what had happened is that the PRU in Phong Nam province had as I understood it now, they had long and short of it is Ben cheated somebody out of his cut.
Okay.
All right? And that person, it fractured what was otherwise a unified unit, leadership.
Okay.
Now, it may have been ghost soldiers. It may have been extortion money, if you will, protection money, if you will, but in any event, they came to me, and I...
Who's the other party?
Din.
So Din cheated Din?
I don't know.
Okay.
Din was the guy who came. Whether or not Din was the one that did it, I don't know. I know Din, you know, I made the mistake of being young and foolish and indicating that we were going to get to the bottom of this. So forth, and if there was chicanery, we would take care of it. Well, all of a sudden Mr. Vin is interested in me going on an operation with him. And people are telling me don't go.
Patrick told you not to go.
No, Patrick was gone by then.
Okay.
Patrick probably was the one who gave you enough smarts to figure out what was happening, but no, he was gone by then.
Who told you not to go?
One of the other crew guys.
Okay.
Not all
did you have
bad.
Any, you mean an American crew guy? Or
no, Vietnamese crew guys.
Did you have Americans working for you running the crew, or did you guys do it all yourselves?
No, we did it all ourselves.
Okay.
At that point, the agency was disengaging from the crew. They wanted to get away from it. It was bad PR. And those of us who were involved were hanging on by our fingernails trying to keep it going.
So at that point, do you stop going out on operations with the crew?
No. No, I went right up to the end.
Okay.
I just felt very strongly that they were effective.
But they changed the name to SRG. They don't stop doing what they're doing. They just changed the name
changed
again.
The name.
I mean, they had originally been counter-terrorists, so they changed them to PROOF. Now they...
Now the PROOF
is bad, so they're going to change the SRG. Same people, same job.
Same job, same modus operandi, same basic type of operation.
Now, up to the ceasefire, and the flags are going up, you're getting the people, and as people expose themselves in preparation for the ceasefire, you bring them into the pick, you get more information on them, the nets, you go out, you get more
people. That's what you try to do.
And is that what happens right up to the ceasefire?
It continued beyond the ceasefire, because we developed information that enabled us to continue to operate after the ceasefire, and we continued to operate after the ceasefire.
Was there a cut in personnel in the station?
You mean in the base?
Yeah.
In the sense of, no, I don't think so. But at this point, you have to understand the crew was, as far as agency involvement, was denuded. I mean, the agency had, they finally kind of transferred it to special police. It became a special police operation, which was legitimate. And we sort of, I mean, I guess I would venture to say that at that point, American involvement was almost zero. You know, the way I was able to maintain some semblance of influence was having worked with them and being able to get them into the hospital if they get hurt. There was a German hospital in Da Nang, and I was able to get them those kinds of, I could get them medical treatment, which is a pretty big thing to a man that's exposing himself to hostile fire, so.
Well, I don't think that I really understand.
Okay.
There's a period here where the PRU lose a certain amount of money, right? Where they used to be getting paid directly from the agency.
Right.
Now they're not getting paid directly from the agency. So you lose influence with them, but you can still conduct operations with them. Is it that you still have operational control, you just don't have administrative control?
What happened was is that when we paid them, we ran them. We had the capability to order them, to control them.
I mean, you would go to Vin once a month and give him a bag of money, right?
No, it was more people. We went so far as to make sure each individual soldier was paid the amount of money.
Okay, so okay. You paid each guy?
Physically paid them.
Okay.
In the units. Now, I'm not telling you that I went through every province to do that, but what I'm telling you is that Americans oversaw the pay, at least up there, to make sure people were paid. Now, that, in some provinces, they may have just turned the bag of money over to the crew chief and said, you take care of it. But I know that the pay calls, where people were checked and paid, to try.
Were they fingerprinted to make sure they were the right guy and that kind of, or did you?
By that time, you pretty well knew.
How much did a guy get paid?
That was gone. And then what we became, in effect, were advisors. We were the co-buns or the co-tribunes.
What's that? Is that a French word?
No, it's... they didn't like the word advisor. They felt that was demeaning, so we became coordinators. That's Vietnamese for coordinator. And like any other American advisor, like the special police advisor, he can go to the special police and say, I think you should do this, or I think you should have that training. But ultimately, if the special police say, up yours, he has to go back to his office and sit down and think if he can get...
Then my question to you is, so then... Now what's happened is right at Saigon, money is going to Ho Chau Tuan at Pru National Headquarters.
Yeah.
And he's sending it out to the province, to the Vietnamese province guys. And now, so I would think that that would make the job of a province Pru chief more valuable. Because now he doesn't have to get money from the CIA. He can get it directly from another Vietnamese guy.
It became, in the sense, you mean for...
Yeah, for...
Corruption purposes.
For corruption purposes, it just cuts out this...
Yeah. Absolutely. That's why I said to you, the Pru members themselves did not like the idea of the Americans being cut out of the chain.
Okay.
Because now
they have to answer to Ho Chau Tuan in Saigon, and he's not going to be as just as
the Americans.
That's just the Pru guy, the American Pru guy out there.
Everybody... The Vietnamese aren't stupid. They know that if their pay is controlled through their own administrative process, the opportunity or the likelihood of graft, scamming, and diversion of funds is quite a bit larger than if it comes through the Americans. Because the Americans like receipts and they like to count out money.
All right, now I understand. So now there's this period of transition. And everybody's readjusting to a new role, a new relationship, but operationally it's pretty much stays the same. When you go out on operation, it's still the same
initial
stuff.
It's the relationship. It's the same objective.
Yeah.
We're still trying to neutralize, I hate that word. I get more trouble with that word than you can imagine. We're still trying to attack PC infrastructure. But the relationship between Pru advisor and Pru unit changes.
Yeah.
Initially, there's no difference.
Yeah.
Because the impact, the full impact of the payment process hasn't hit them yet.
Right.
They don't understand that they can tell the American to go to hell and still get their paycheck.
Okay.
And it takes a while for them to come to that realization. They do come to that. And it becomes more an art of persuasion than an art of command.
On the
Americans' part. It's no longer, we're going to mount this operation to do this. It's, we ought to.
Let's go do
this. Let's do this. Yeah. What do you think of this? This makes sense in terms of what we're trying to do.
And
that's a big
difference. Is there a big difference? Are there less operations? Is that what it translates into?
Different type of operations. And yes, to some extent, less operations. You began to experience situations where a lot of excuses began to surface why you couldn't go.
We just went last week. Tired.
Well, not so much that, but stuff like, we're going to need additional radio equipment. The batteries are gone. We've got our widgets being repaired. It hasn't come back. We're having problems with supply. And so it's one excuse after another, because it's easier for them to sit in the province capital and run their little money nets. And they did, like every other police organization in Vietnam. They had their, I'm sure they had their scams going.
Yeah.
So, the relationship changes. When you control somebody's paycheck, you control.
Yeah.
When you, it's a.
Excuse me.
You see, if you started out at the province food guy, not the region.
He was the region guy.
He was.
He had everything.
He had all right. So, okay. And in the beginning, you're just the Quang Nam food guy.
In the beginning, I was nothing.
In the beginning,
I was Patrick's bagman. You know, it was one of those things, you know, Bruce, I'm going out tomorrow night, you want to go?
Yeah.
And, you know, at first that seemed like fine. And then Patrick sort of channeled me towards Quang Nam crew because they were frankly the best unit.
Okay.
And my relationship with Quang Nam crew was probably closer than any other in the region. In fact, I can say that regarding the Quang Tri crew after the 72 offensive, because they got decimated, and it never really got reestablished, and I never took a hell of a lot of interest in it, to be honest with you.
Was there a guy up there running them?
Yeah. It seems to me he died of cancer. Something to that effect. And of course, the assistant was
there while he was there, or has since died of.
No, he in Vietnam. I got pictures of his funeral. So. The assistant, the deputy chief, of course, went with the bad guys.
Did you have an American in each province?
We had Americans. It became an adjunct duty of the special police liaison.
Okay,
but. Frankly, many of them didn't take much interest in it.
Okay.
And that's, see, the
so they really did become under the FI guy.
Well, no, we didn't even call them FI guys at that point.
Okay.
The special police liaison guys were, and I guess I'm going to get in a lot of trouble for saying this, but it was such an easy job.
Okay.
I mean, they didn't have to do much. They'd get down to the province special police officer and shoot the breeze with him, get a few reports out of the pick.
Mm-hmm.
Send them down, and life was pretty easy for them. Nobody ever; those guys didn't go out on operations. You know, if they carried a revolver, it was only because it looked good.
What about the whole idea of the province officer who ran both special police and crew? I mean, that was the big thing back in '67. Is that the agency was going to have province officers, guys in each province who could run the crew and the special police?
I mean, I think that's why the
what happened when during the build-up, that's where a lot of these
jeweler types came. Because all of a sudden there was a need to have a paramilitary capability. And you have to understand that after the Bay of Pigs, the whole paramilitary operation in the agency was raped.
Yes.
And they transferred this to the Department of Defense.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden, we've got this situation over in Southeast Asia where we've got a requirement for to run a secret war in Laos, and we've got all of this paramilitary stuff in Vietnam. And the agency looks around, and it's got all these FI guys.
Yep.
And the people that, you know, that by the time I got to the agency, there was no longer any requirement to become airborne qualified.
Yeah,
there was no requirement, there was no physical fitness requirements.
Yeah.
I mean, you had a lot of guys, some of them, I mean, if you said physical fitness, that meant not smoking for the day.
Yeah, right.
I mean, so all of a sudden there was a need for people who could go to the field.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did is they went out and they recruited all of these military types, put them through the PM course,
mm-hmm.
and part of the program
had
was
Loomis gone through the course.
Loomis was one of those guys,
okay.
And then send them out to the province to run the proof,
right.
And to run special police type operations.
Both of them.
In some cases, yes. Okay,
because I always thought it was the FI.
Well,
guy who did the special police?
That's really what happened. In reality, the FI guys concentrated on the special police, and the PRU guy was PRU, and he was a jeweler.
Okay.
In Patry's case, that was an exception. Patry was the officer in charge of Quang Nam province,
okay.
outside the Da Nang city limits.
Okay.
And he ran both.
Okay.
Okay. And that's where I went in after him. I became the OIC of Guangdong Province, outside of Da Nang City.
And then he went on to the region?
He went home.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and so what happened was, in any event, when all the heat started about the program, the decision was made that we got to disengage. We're going to lower the profile.
Mm-hmm.
What we're going to do is we're going to change the name. We're going to transfer the money function. I mean, this is the Shackley stuff. He can tell you this.
Okay.
But the concept, as I understood it, was we change the name. We can distance ourselves by no longer paying them directly.
Yeah.
And we lower the profile of the advisors and the American involvement by simply not manning the paramilitary slots in the provinces. So what we'll do, first of all, is we'll man the paramilitary slot at the region level, and we'll have him work through the FI special police officer for coordination with the PRU. All right?
Okay.
So, for example, in Hue City, that's the best example.
Okay.
We had a special police liaison guy. He was a contract officer.
Okay.
His job primarily was to, you know, deal with the special police and run so-called communist agent operations through special police and interrogation and that kind of stuff. But he also would be the contact if you needed somebody up in Tuatim province to run over to the Pru compound and say, you know, you need to come to Da Nang, or here's this, or I'm delivering supplies to you. Or, I mean, that was the chain. What that did was it took there no longer was an identifiable slot
okay.
in the province dedicated exclusively to PRU or to SRG or whatever you want to call it, all right?
And this is after the ceasefire?
This is SRG
this
period.
This is this whole, okay.
Okay, we're retrenching because we don't like the criticism. And that's how they retrenched. So Patry ends up at the region level.
Yeah.
Okay. He was the Guangdong PRU guy.
Right. I got you.
All of a sudden, he's in Da Nang, and they're saying to him, you got responsibility for all five PRU units in the provinces.
Okay.
And if you need help, what you do is you ask the FI agency special police liaison officer.
Okay.
Okay. But in terms of the special police agency liaison officer going out on an operation, no, they didn't go.
Right.
Because they weren't paramilitary people. They were FI striped pants guys.
Right.
So what happened would be, and it's one of the reasons that that I got involved, is Patrick wanted somebody that would go. And it's, you know, a lot of the FI guys were 40, 50 years old.
Yep.
And you know, take a 40-year-old man and put a rucksack on him and load him up with guns and send him out in the middle of the night.
Did you do operations with each of the provinces? Province crew teams?
I certainly did with Guangdong. I did the most with Guangdong because they were easy and they were good.
Yep.
Tuatian I never went with.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Quang Tri I never went with.
Okay.
Tuatian I went with once that I remember. Quang Tin I went with once or twice. Quang Nai.
Were there any Americans
times.
Who would go with them? Did the military have anybody that they could send over? So they're really, really just at that point, really.
The
Vietnamese are doing it themselves.
At that point, they were sort of a self-sustaining unit, you see, we had removed the paycheck, we had removed the guy on the ground who was liaising with him, and yet it was a tough job because they still were looking to us for support.
Okay.
They would constantly, you know, radio. You know, we need
ammunition.
Yeah, 800 blankets or, you know, not 800 blankets. But, you know, that support, supply stuff.
Okay.
And that's how, you know, I was able to maintain some degree of control because I could get them that kind of support. Another way I maintained control, particularly over the Guangdong crew, was we used to have a thing called the Nighthawk.
Okay.
The Nighthawk was a UH-1 with a minigun on it, and a spotlight, and a, 50 caliber with armor piercing and a what we called freewheeling M60, which was nothing more than an M60 machine gun.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to fly out of Da Nang at night,
mm-hmm.
at a treetop level, looking for interdiction to primarily the rocket belt.
Okay.
Because the Soviets' 122-millimeter rocket, I think it's got 18 kilometers.
Yeah.
So, drew a circle around Da Nang, and they patrolled this rocket belt at treetop level, trying to interdict the rockets.
Yeah, if you see where the rockets are coming from, and then just go right back to where they origin.
Well, not so much that, is that you could. If it's amazing, if you're on the ground, and the helicopter is flying, even a UH-1, which slaps the air, if it's flying treetop level or below, you can't hear the damn thing.
Yeah. Okay.
And all of a sudden, it's there.
Yeah.
And we'd catch them, you know, some of the, when we turn that thing off, some of the great moral dilemmas of the war occurred at that time. But anyway, any event, and Patrick taught me this, went down and was very solicitous and there was a certain aura about being a CIA guy,
mm-hmm.
and you were able to trade on that notoriety, if you will, to elicit support.
And just get a hearing.
Yeah. I go down to the guys that are going to run fly the Nighthawk.
Yeah.
And they say to the guy, hey, you know, this is who I am, this is what I do. No kidding. Yeah, that's what I do. And you know, if I go out some night and I need some help, do you think you might be? Oh, I'd love to. No problem. You know, you anytime, just call us up and we'll coordinate the freaks, and you need some help, we'll be there. And I did that on several occasions. We'd go out and we'd see them, and either we couldn't engage them or they were moving, or, you know, we needed support. Come up on the freak and there's the Nighthawk up there. And boy, the crew thought that was great. All of a sudden they got their own helicopter gunship flying around out there at night.
Okay.
And that was major fire support for us.
Yeah, okay.
Because we didn't have...
That's a relatively late development to that flying at night stuff too. I mean, that wasn't something that they had a capability to do back in 65 and 66.
This was 72. This is after the offensive.
What did you give them in return?
Oh, captured crap. We'd give them flags. We'd give them
trophy
guns. Shit. I'm convinced that my guys were manufacturing them in order to, you know. In fact, I know. In fact, Patrick did this too. He had a flag, and they went out one night. They had an airlift, and he conned these guys, and it was all a setup. He conned these guys into airlifting us out, right? So we go out and, oh hell, we hit the LZ and I don't think there's anybody there. The people are shooting and grenades are going off and all this guy, just one of the little guys who Loomis had put up to it, comes running out of the house with this DC flag and gives it to the pilot, right? And the pilot takes off and oh boy, they thought that was great stuff. It used to be funny because Yeah, I'll tell you the story. It has nothing to do with it.
And on track, because there's so many points that need to be elaborated on in the course, but my idea is to get a sense of what was the difference prior to and after the ceasefire.
After the ceasefire.
What are the substantive differences, either in the way you operate, the way you're organized?
After the ceasefire, obviously, we're organized as part of the Special Police. And the PRU... team no longer is a separate entity co-equal to the right. Special
What about agency. Your organization in Da Nang itself? Does the ceasefire bring about a reorganization?
Oh, sure.
How is that reorganized?
We become part of the council.
Okay.
We cease our independent compound. We fought that arm on tong, but we didn't win it. Now we were at peace. And so we were incorporated into the state, under the State Department umbrella, and worked out of the U.S. consulate building. Okay. All right.
Did you actually vacate your building?
Actually vacated it. Gone. Closed it down.
Okay.
And we're working out of the U.S. consulate building.
Okay.
On the river.
Okay.
And at that point, the PRU operations as such are gone.
Okay.
Not in the sense that they're still not doing that kind of thing, but but in the sense that there is no longer a separate entity known as PRUSRG or anything. Now, at that point, the Phoenix program, the coordination program, as far as I'm concerned, is dead.
Okay.
There's nothing left. There's no Americans are driving the program.
Yep.
To the extent that the Vietnamese give it lip service, it's form over substance.
Okay.
It doesn't, it's not working.
Nobody's, there is no coordination between the MSS and Special Police anymore.
Yeah. Not of any substance that's mattering.
Okay.
If there's coordination, it's more to try to find out what the other guy's doing.
Yeah.
Than
okay.
It
so
is
people
to give
meet
your
at
own.
A cocktail party and they say, "Well, what are you doing?" And the other guy says, "Well, what are you doing?"
No, they would have a they might have a meeting, but the purpose of the meeting was each guy would come prepared to try and take away rather than to share information.
Okay.
The MSS rep is there. He ain't going to tell him anything about MSS operations, but he wants to find out everything about special police operations.
Yeah. Okay.
That kind of mentality.
Okay.
You know, and, so to me, the program is a dead issue.
Had you been, prior to the ceasefire, attending Phoenix
coordination
stuff or had any role in that?
I didn't
was it the MACV cords guy?
I let the Army do it or the Army guy do it. I just didn't. There was a guy at the province, and you know, maybe this was my own parochial view. I felt that the PRU were the only people that were out there doing it anyway. So you go to a meeting and there's special police there, and there's MSS there, and there's a field force police rep there, and there's a national police rep there. None of those guys was going to go out in the village and pick anybody up or try to run an ambush. So what the hell's the use of going out there?
Yeah.
Okay? And then I've got my own organization that doesn't trust the information that doesn't come from within its own structure.
Yeah.
So the special police gives us information. My guys are real reluctant to act on it because they're afraid they're going to get set up.
Well, after the ceasefire, do the PRU organization still have their agents in the field? Are they still getting intelligence?
Sure.
You know, but it is parallel then to the special branch.
It is
operation.
Subordinate to the special branch operation.
Okay.
What happened is that the special branch police officer.
Yeah.
See, that whole thing underwent a transition.
Yeah.
If you remember what happened is initially, special branch and national police were not, they were in a parallel command structure.
Yeah, two organizations.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was changed, whereby the special branch came under the control of the national police.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. And then it was changed further, whereby the PRU came under the control of the special branch.
Yeah.
So the national police commander in the province controlled the special police commander, who controlled the PRU commander.
Yeah.
So the PRU was nothing more than, if you wanted to run an operation, you no longer went to the PRU commander.
You went to the,
special police commander.
Yeah.
That who was your liaison guy. And then the SP guy would call in the PRU chief and usually run the operation. In Quang Nam, that worked very well.
Who was your special branch?
I knew you were going to ask me that.
Yeah. Who was the special branch liaison guy? After the ceasefire.
You mean the American?
The Vietnamese. Vietnamese and American.
I was the American guy.
You're the American.
When Loomis left, I became the officer in charge of the province.
Right.
So I had everything outside of the city limits of Da Nang for that province. That was mine. And then I had the PRU units in the other provinces, but nothing else.
Yeah, so you had special police in Quang Nam.
Right.
All
province.
Yeah, province, always. And the PRU in all the other provinces. Yeah, so you had the split, whereas there'd be a special police, another American doing special police in Tua Tien and Quang Tri and anything else. Did that change at the ceasefire? Or was it still the same? Were you still a special police advisor?
It changed in the sense, after the ceasefire, that did not change. That part did not change.
Okay.
But it changed in the sense that after the ceasefire, the PRU were now special police.
Okay.
So the special police advisor in each unit, in each province,
yep,
also, in theory, was the PRU man.
Okay.
All right.
So now you're really then just restricted to Quang Nam.